Another fine Sunday afternoon here in Asheville between the Blue Ridge and the Smokies. And you're in for Wordplay. I'm Jeff Davis. With me in the studio today, my co-host Sebastian Matthews.
Hello, hello.
And our special guest, Keith Flynn, whom we wanted to get on the program for months and months, and finally we're able to do it. If you don't know Keith, he's an amazing poet, amazing performer, and lots of different ways. We're going to hear pretty much something from the whole spectrum today. Complete.
Today will be part one, probably.
Part one, yes.
Of a couple parts.
He has so much stuff. He's got four books, two CDs at least, plus the ones with Crystal Zoo, which were...
Yeah. It's the Keith Flynn trilogy.
The Keith Kill, indeed. He studied at Morrisville College in UNC Asheville. His four books of poetry are The Talking Drum, The Book of Monsters, The Lost Sea, and The Golden Ratio, which is just out, right? That was in April, I believe. Right?
That's correct. It came out the first week of March.
And you also have a new book of prose, The Rhythm Method, Razzmatazz, and Memory, How to Make Your Poetry Swing, which I'm looking forward to reading myself.
It's a killer book.
Is it a killer book?
It's wonderful.
All right. Okay.
That came out this year from Writer's Digest Books, and it's at Malaprops as well as the as his book of poems. I mean, and also Keith Flynn is the editor and founder of Asheville Poetry Review. Are you going into a dozen years now, or is it?
We're in our 14th year.
We established the
journal in 1994. June of 94 is when we published the first issue, and then it's grown quite a bit since that time. We get over 8,000 submissions an issue now, and we've published just about a little under 1,600 writers from 22 different countries. It's been quite a journey.
Well, I bet you in some ways you could look at the history of you'd look back at Asheville's growth, and you can look at the Asheville Poetry Review and see a lot of parallels.
They probably would parallel each other in terms of on a graph of the growth. Yeah,
cultural kind of just, yeah. Well, what are you going to start with today? I think we're going to start with a poem, right? Or are we going to do a cut off a CD first?
You know, what would you like, Keith? We can do either one.
Well, it might make narrative sense to start with a song from my previous life as a rock and roll singer, and then we'll move from there into a conjunction of things.
Sounds good. We'll cover what do we do? Death letter?
No, that's for later in the show.
Yeah, we'll do the seed.
That'd be fine. This poem is a reconfiguring of an early poem that I wrote when I was about 17 or 18, and then the band, we put two chord progressions to it. One little note I might make about the solo at the end of this, we had a tough time trying to figure out exactly what we wanted the solo to do, and we took the solo that was played and then reversed it and played it from the opposite outro to started at where it normally would have started on the downbeat at the end of the third verse and completely flipped it over in the track.
Really?
So that's one of the reasons it sounds so strange in the track. But that might be something to listen for as it comes by.
Definitely. It's kind of like shades of the old Beatles, you know, look for the Paul McCartney's Dead.
Yes, desperate production trick.
Yeah. Ah. What's the song called?
This is The Seed.
The Seed.
By Crystal Zoo.
All right.
Thank you.
That was about as rocking as we ever been on wordplay.
That was. Yeah. That was, yeah.
That's the ballad on that record.
I think you're the only poet I know who has had an actual previous life. A lot of us fantasize about being rock and rollers, but you're the only one I know who has actually been a rock and roller.
Well, it seemed early on, I seemed to compartmentalize my life as a rock and roll singer and a poet. But as I grew older, I began to realize that they're all coming from the same wellspring, and it's all the same voice. Mm-hmm. And slowly but surely, I've been able to assimilate both things into my writing and then especially performances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can hear. Yeah. I mean, I just heard you last couple nights ago at Black Mountain College, and you seamlessly bring the song and the kind of that impulse to break out into song for a whole bunch of reasons, and the lyric, then your own poetry, that comes together. I mean, sometimes it's one bleeding into the other, and sometimes, you know, it seems like it's, you can switch back and forth as you like.
Sometimes the songs create a stillness in which the poetry can nestle and folks will get ready to listen to it. Yeah. You know, it's difficult to create stillness in America. You know, dreaming in America is no cinch. Sometimes it's hard to find those expensive places where you can actually find quiet to create poetry. But, you know, fortunately, the mountains, which are our own sort of arbitrary paradise, allows that stillness to happen more often than not. That's why I think the mountains are so conducive to poetry and to other artistic endeavors, dance, ballet, plays, and painting. There's tons and tons of graphic artists in the mountains as well.
Yeah,
indeed.
Etch-a-Sketch, you know, for instance.
Well, there are some fantastic Etch-a-Sketch artists, but most of them, I think they live in Looking Back, Texas.
Yeah. Or Crawford, Texas.
Yeah. What do you got next for us? You got a poem to read us?
Since we did the seed, and like I said, I was trying to make sure that we did something for that record that was a little more sedate for our surroundings. We'll rock a little harder in a minute. I'll do a poem called Mimesis. It has a head note by Jackson Pollock that says, "I am nature. So little of the gilded time afforded me, I found the ground to put it in. I write till 5 a.m., but rise and dig 15 holes for Amy. Marigolds, crepe myrtle, thousand-flowered aster. Sometimes I love her so much, my eyes burst into long, feverish green fireworks like a sun-gold cypress. Who could be as sad as a willow or as soft, leaning into the slingshot of the wind? Jack Spicer says, poet, be like God. But I can never make a poem with the pre-migratory restlessness of a black pole warbler. I can never feel the compulsion to write as deep as an egret's urgent need to fly. But just as I can feel the anger and water behind a dam, other intentions are caught in the net of life and time, like blown petals scattered across the cattle trough and carelessly ingested. A being on the verge of departure is free, its mind fixed on what is to be done. Like a snake drinking milk from a bowl, its body gently rolling. All exiles were heroes before, leading a procession of flowers. A hinge of good sense on their door, but their absence is their power. My spade, breaking the ground's black skin, is dumb to the sour wood's intentions, but by extension is complicit to the bee's mordant excursions, the pollen peppered invisibly on the wings of the night air."
Nice. What's the title of that one again, Keith?
Mimesis.
Mimesis. Yeah.
I just had an idea. I'm not sure this question. We'll see. But just seeing you made a couple moves in that poem that were just like you're able to kind of stop and rest at a place in the poem and then really just kind of switch gears a little bit or take a whole new tangent. And I wonder, and then come back, you know. And I can't exactly call it, but there are two or three places, like turns almost, like in the poem. Before the bees, you come to a place where you kind of just, you kind of step to the side. And I wondered if that's part of what you've learned as a songwriter. And I wonder, I guess the bigger question is, do you find that your years writing songs or taking poems and putting them into songs for your band has informed your writing poems? Or if you can talk to that in any way.
Well, there's no question about that. One of the things that I try to accomplish as a poet is density. I try to configure as many images that pertain to what I'm trying to envision as possible, and yet to make the music a consistent momentum throughout the poem. In other words, a poem really is a long piece of hungry momentum that just flashes down the page. And what I want to do is to have nothing impede that movement, to admit no impediment whatsoever, whether it's technical, psychological, or rhythmic. And what I find helps a lot is to come to a resounding place in the poem and then turn on it, and not to use overabundance of abstract language, but allow the imagery itself to carry the momentum, mm-hmm. as opposed to just an abstract thought. Mm-hmm. Poems are made of words, not ideas. Mm-hmm. And if you get back to the basic building blocks, that's how you build rhythm in a poem. The ideas come along as the thought unravels. But if you begin the poem just by getting some idea out, then the music is lost before you've ever begun.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, the difference between a poem and a song is, you know, in a song you have, you know, chord progressions, tempo that you have to make the lyric adhere to. In a poem, the architecture of the sound is built from the building blocks of every syllable mm-hmm. itself, so that each beat has its place in the poem. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons poems are performed badly by their authors is because they forget that there is a beat after beat after beat in the poem that has to be recognized. And if you lose that place, you just rush through the sound, and then it's mashed away and lost. In a song, you don't do that as much, because the song itself is predicated on the tempo, the drummer, right. and then the chord progression. Yeah. And the lyric has a certain specificity of meter.
Yeah, the music is the room in which the lyrics walk through, and you can't really help it.
Exactly, and they have to open each door to the next section, yeah. and that is pronounced. In a poem, that has to be invisible. Yeah. The poet moves through the wall and doesn't open the door.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Nicely said.
Yeah, this is Wordplay on 103.5 WPVM, the Progressive Voice of the Mountains. We're talking today with author, editor, musician, lyricist Keith Flynn. I'm Jeff Davis, and with me is Sebastian Matthews. Have you finished your French fries?
Not
still
yet.
Working on his French fries. Okay. Hang on just a second.
I think what we're going to do next is a song called Death Letter, which was originally conceived by the great Son House in 1929. Son House was one of the great progenitors of American blues music, predates Robert Johnson, and this song was recorded in 1929. It's the most heartbreaking blues lyric that I ever heard in my life. I was so moved the first time I heard it, I couldn't believe it. And then we put it in a different setting. I reimagined it, you know, sort of like Zeppelin and Cream did, and it's much more up-tempo than Son House originally imagined it. And, of course, he had like 12 or 14 verses, and I tried to break it into three or four. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty rocking, and it got, after the record Pouch, which was recorded at the Power Station in New York in 1994, when this record came out early 96 on Warhead and BMG, this song started getting some airplay on some blues stations down south. And listening to it will give you an idea about what I was talking about the lyric a second ago and the reconfiguration of the lyric to suit the chord progression. And then that'll lead us to a nice, funny story about the Black Pope.
All right.
This
is Crystal Zoo.
Death Letter.
Death Letter.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a bunch of questions about the power station in the 90s, but tell us about the Black Pope and that song, because it sounds like that's the song that got you on that radio show.
Well, it was. There's a DJ called the Black Pope. He operated in a little station outside of Birmingham, Alabama, and he was one of my favorite DJs when we were on the road in the band. And many times, it was difficult to get on that show. He's very ornery, a very interesting character. And I imagined when I finally got on the show itself, I imagined what it would be like if this curmudgeonly little renegade black man who was probably in his 70s, late 70s at that point, if he actually had become the Pope. So the poem is a imagining of this DJ who played nothing but blues and never played the same blues song twice that I ever heard. If he was the actual Pope operating out of the Vatican in Italy, his catch line was always, he'd start it out and he'd go, "The Black Pope makes your radio thunder, thunder, thunder. The Black Pope ignores the black smoke that obscures St. Peter's dove, made of single malt scotch and radar love. The Black Pope has canonized Otis Redding and pushed his burning funeral pyre gently seaward from the dock of the bay. 'Cause you see, the Black Pope does not pay. All the reparations for slavery are made manifest by the Holy See. And the autograph of the Black Pope is certainly worth more than any goods he may consume. The Black Pope is cool as a fan. His Pope mobile is the Batmobile, and baby, it's armed to the teeth. The Black Pope knelt on the grave of Muddy Waters, and he kissed the ground beneath. The Black Pope believes in the unwavering white smoke of choice and named Aretha Franklin as his first cardinal. The Black Pope likes his medicine, keeps a steady stock of blow in the papal crucifix. My little old cabinet shotgun, he calls it. The Black Pope believes in the spiritual necessity of Jerusalem, but will not stomach any gefilte fish. The Black Pope is not boorish. Let it be known, he says, my mother was a Jew and listened to Chet Baker all night long in her honeymoon suite with Muhammad Farrakhan Jr. The Black Pope has a porcupine for a concubine and a cat named Mr. Midnight that likes to hump the drapes. The Black Pope has destroyed every copy in the world of To Kill a Mockingbird, but he loves the Planet of the Apes. The Black Pope says, the voice of Howling Wolf filled Gabriel's horn, and that's what made Mary let it be. The Black Pope does not say please. His skin is the pallor of a coal mine and does not glow. The Black Pope looks me in the eye and says, boy, invite the people to buy your record and get the hell on off of my radio show.
That's a good timing.
It is.
I love that poem. I've heard you read it a few times, and I can always hang out in that poem. I feel like I'm in that forever, in that little DJ booth. Sweating it with you.
Oh yeah, I was definitely sweating it. He is a charismatic, magnificent presence, and broaches no bullshit.
And there is no going back to that. I mean, that's a dying art, a dying breed of a man. Of no, that kind of DJ, that kind of show, it's going away.
Oh yeah, you don't have stations now that you can hear a ragtime record followed by a bop record followed by a blues record followed by a rock record. It don't happen anymore.
Yeah. NCW, you can get it some days. Yeah.
That's
some
fantastic.
Days. Yeah.
But yeah, the whole, corporate takeover of the media and so on has pretty much wiped out the small, that kind of operation too.
Well, certainly the current administration has made it more amenable for huge corporate entities to swallow up small independent right. stations. And then, you know, one guy somewhere makes out a format and then everybody has got to, you know, toe
yeah.
the line.
Yeah. This station is probably a Clear Channel or, you know, part of a mega chain now.
Oh, no. PBM is, is one of the holdouts.
Yeah. Yes, right. Yeah. Yeah. We are the citadel of grassroots. Close to the ground, progressive radio.
Progressive. Yeah.
Progressive,
that's a great
voice
word.
Of the mountains. It is. It's so true. Keith, we are going to have to probably stop now and ask you back right now for another show yeah. soon, sooner than later.
Yeah. You don't have to get the hell off our radio.
Yeah. you got to get the hell back. Yeah. You've been listening to Keith Flynn reading his poems, listening to his band, The Crystal Zoo.
This has been Wordplay. It'll be rebroadcast Tuesday at 6 p.m., Wednesday at 7, and it's available 24 hours a day by podcast from the station WPVM.org. It's produced in the Haywood Street studios of WPVM. Our theme is by Jeffrey Keezer, and it's called Falling Up. ¶¶